Hello, everyone. Welcome to Pod Maverick After Dark. I'm Kirk Henderson, joined by Josh Bow. Hopefully, I will be able to not get kicked off my own show tonight. Josh, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. We made it. It's over.
We did make it.
It's over.
And in typical typical fashion for everything that's essentially happened since, when Luka was traded, the Mavericks just managed to end the season in the most annoying fucking way possible. They beat the Chicago Bulls. Yay. Fan appreciation night. Yay. I am so, I don't feel very good. You know that. You and I talked, like, you offered for me to have the night off, but I felt obligated to be here. And like, this was just too stupid. Like I don't want to be too mean about, you know, Ryan Nembhard's history making performance with, let's see here. Sorry, now my browser's freaking out now. With his, you know, how many points? 15 points, 23 assists, 9 rebounds. 23 assists is really cool. I don't want to be mean about this shit, but it's I'm not here for future Mavs trivia questions. And if we're going to suffer through a gorillion losses, for them to do what they did tonight, which is come out and really beat the shit out of the Bulls. Like, I don't want to sit here and act like this organization wasn't attempting to tank, because we know better. We know better. Like, look at how many guys they sat. So part of this is just like frustration at situation, because going into tonight, they were either going to tie for the 6th worst odds, or if they won, they were going to slide back and then tie for the 7th worst odds, which is essentially what's happened, unless New Orleans, that pathetic ass bag of a franchise, managed to win one. But of course they finished the season on a 1-11 run because they're so fucking stupid that they don't even know how to not tank properly. So we're just here, we're slide back, you know, and we're slide back one position. And I wish it wouldn't bother me so existentially, but if as a group of people that have chosen to watch as many games as we have, if you're going to commit to losing, to do something on the last day of the season to set you back is frustrating.
Yeah. I'm surprised. What was it about tonight that fired you up? Because for most of the season, the last month, the tanking stuff hasn't bothered you in terms of the Mavericks not really embracing the tank so much. So why now? And I mean, we've been talking in Slack, and I kind of know why, but yeah.
They had two goals for tonight. Get Cooper over 28 points so that he could pass Luka Doncic in rookie points per game. And then lose so that they could tie with Memphis and secure, you know, 6 worst odds for the lottery. They did neither thing. I don't know. It's probably more everything boiling over at once and me not feeling good just putting it together. But it's so annoying to me. And I think that it's really not even the game. It's everything. It's going back to, you know, Patrick Dumont and the decision to keep Nico Harrison all last summer, letting him rebuild the team and his own image, which, you know, the only thing I can discern from his own image means that he doesn't know how to dribble a basketball, because the Mavericks assembled a team without anyone who knew how to dribble a basketball. And then firing him 9 games into the season, it was our guy Brian Roby in our Mavs Moneyball Slack, like, described it as half measures. And it's a half measures issue. That's what they've been doing. The move to trade AD was very, very important. It's I would say almost more spiritually than team building wise, because you just got to move on from something like that. But again, they didn't trade enough of their veterans, because they either couldn't, like somebody like Klay Thompson maybe didn't want to get traded, or they still harbored like weird, oh, we're going to be okay. And so as a result, like, when they ended up with the 6 worst odds for a significant portion of these last 20 games, that was actually a surprise. You know, that I've said that a time or two. So that I'm like, it's just that they couldn't finish the job is fucking annoying.
Yeah. And it's pretty remarkable. They finished the season. They legitimately didn't earnestly tank all season. Obviously, that's not to say they weren't bad. There's a difference between being bad and tanking. Obviously, the only tanking move they made this season was trading Anthony Davis.
Yep.
I mean, since then, I mean, everyone played, for the most part. I mean, yes, like, you know, no Daniel Gafford, PJ Washington, Clay Thompson. Some of those guys were in and out of the lineup for the last month, but they all played relatively, you know, they played a decent amount. They weren't shut down. And when they played, they also played. They didn't play, you know, 15 minutes and then you get shut down, and they didn't do weird lineup shenanigans in the fourth quarter. I mean, you look at this game. I mean, like, Clay Thompson hits four threes in 10 minutes. Chris Middleton hits two threes in 6 minutes. They start, you know, Cooper, Max Christie, Middleton, Clay's playing. They didn't earnestly start playing end of the bench two-way guys until the start of the second half. That was the first time it felt like all season that they were like deliberately holding back their best lineups, which is remarkable. And they still
honorable. And I'm not unhappy about, like, I don't think I would have been able to stomach a true tanking season, like a true, like, last 20 games of watching John Polakaitis do whatever the hell he wants and Ryan Nemhard. I don't know if I could do it. We probably would have changed the way our podcast was structured, quite honestly. And I it really isn't just tonight's game. I shouldn't act like it is. It's just so annoying because I'm just not here for it. And the God bless the broadcasting team, who's just so excited. They get to record their second home win since the trade deadline, basically. And, you know, I want people to be happy in the moment, but my God, this is the last time the Mavericks control their first round pick until Jesus Christ returns. It's not like, I feel so insane. It's just like, this has to be an institutional, like, priority. And, you know, Brad Townsend did a puff piece interview where he, you know, as far as I could tell, he didn't ask any follow-up questions to the owner, nothing of anything. It's just, it's almost a PR piece. Which, you know, I'm sure that guy set the terms of the interviews. There's only so much you can do. That's not a criticism of Brad. It's much more of a criticism of the fucking owner. And I find myself just frustrated. We've managed to put a lot of this off because Cooper rules, right? But it's deja vu all over again.
Yeah, because they did this, the Harrison, they're not very good at tanking. They're good at losing games in the last decade outside of, you know, Luka, but they're not really, you know, it's just an organizational thing. They just don't want to do it. And, you know, the argument is the glass half full argument is, well, the culture and setting a foundation and setting good habits matters more than, you know, if you get the sixth pick versus the ninth pick. And I have kind of been one to lean more towards that line of thinking.
It's a good argument.
The older I get, because I just know, you know, we hear more stories about these locker rooms and how these guys mix together, and you really need that. But you look at teams like Washington and Utah and some other of these bad teams that are just bad, like Sacramento, these teams that just keep losing and losing and losing and losing and losing. And it's like, you know, eventually you just develop bad habits and you can't get out of it. On the flip side, maybe the two best teams in the NBA, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the San Antonio Spurs, tanked pretty egregiously, and now they are the class of the league. So obviously losing on purpose didn't hurt that organization's culture or foundation. So it's kind of like a Rorschach test, right? You look at an ink blot test. Like, everyone's looking at the same thing and drawing different conclusions, because you can kind of choose your own adventure and pick which narrative fits your perspective better. Because it's clear that losing, there's no objective right answer on this.
Well, and, you know, it's so funny. You know, I talk about this often, but I've been interacting with, as my son plays more youth league basketball, I get to talk and meet with more parents. Like, I went to a birthday party yesterday for one of the kids and, like, just met and was chatting with a bunch of parents. And when people find out that I do this, you know, there's most sports fans, frankly, I'm getting to this point where it's like, when I talk to people, most sports fans of a given team are what we would consider casuals. They're people who tune in when it suits their schedule and when they remember. 82 games means you have 82 chances to watch a team. I bet most people in the Dallas area that consider themselves Mavs fans in a given year, even when Luka was on the team, would watch 20 games over a 4 month period. It's hard. Like, baseball fans are nuts like this because it's a repetitive schedule. You build it in, you can have it on during the day. Basketball, the way they schedule these damn games, you have to watch them at night at the worst, like 8 o'clock on for the Dallas area. I want to talk about that eventually at some point. These 8 o'clock start times can go to hell. I'm so tired of it. And don't tell me the game start at 7:30 because they fucking don't. But it's just like, so it's very hard to explain to someone that's more on the casual side of things what a draft pick in the NBA can do to your fortunes. The Spurs and Thunder are such good examples that I'm going to use going forward, where it's like, yes, of course, Victor Wembanyama is awesome. That is no shade, but they also got the second and the fourth pick. That is it. If you can't build on that, then you are not good at your job. Yeah. And so when you do, when you don't have the opportunity at those picks, you inevitably need to get lucky. And NBA drafting is not science. It is an art. And we're lucky this year that I do feel that there's a lot of good players. So hopefully this will be for nothing. But I would like a chance at a range of players instead of having, like, if the Mavericks pick, let's just say 8, 9, 10, then they're going to have to pick from who's left over as opposed to from more options. And so it's just a frustrating concept because you watch all this stuff, all this mess, and this one game really shouldn't matter. And it doesn't. I just think it's all kind of boiling over at a time when I'm just grumpy and I'm thinking about it. And it's annoying is all it really comes down to. It's a very annoying concept because the Mavs were gifted the number one pick. And unfortunately, as we learned with Luka last time, when you have a player this talented, your margin for error becomes smaller, not larger, because the expectations increase at a much higher rate. So.
No, I understand. And it's also probably a boiling frustration of just like, this is the process we have to think about. Like, no one should want to root for losing. No one should get mad when your team wins.
That's
like
right.
Just from the grand scheme of
that's like an NBA universe. Incentive structure.
Right, one, right. Yeah. That's not. Yeah, that's just it. I think that adds into it as well. But yeah, I mean, the Mavericks. If the Mavericks wanted to lose more games, they had about 55 more levers to pull, and they didn't pull them. Now, whether that will that bite them in the ass? We won't even be able to judge that till. Like 3 years after this draft, really? Like, because, you know, who knows? Maybe, you know,
sure.
they could hit a home run. But again, I've leaned on the it's probably better to set a foundation and a culture of winning. But then again, you know, the Spurs, the Thunder. I mean, even the Golden State Warriors, the greatest franchise run since Jordan's Bulls. Like, so the greatest team, you know, the Steph Warriors, the greatest team since Jordan's Bulls, I think, or, you know, maybe Shaq, Kobe, Lakers, throw those in there, LeBron Heat. But really the only true, like, you know, Tim Duncan Spurs, whatever. They also tanked. They tanked to get Harrison Barnes before they started their run. Obviously, yeah. That losing didn't impact their culture. They won a billion titles. The Spurs dynasty started because they tanked for Tim Duncan. Obviously, that losing culture didn't hurt them. They won a billion titles. So I get the argument that, like, winning matters, set good habits, but you know what matters more is having the best player, like, that's right. Talent, you know? So that cures everything.
I do want to talk about that because I have a thought in response, but we should cut to a quick break. Thank you so much for supporting our show. I may record I may host a season ending group therapy during the week next week, but Josh and I are largely going to take next week off. We want a break. We earned a break, and we'll probably come back at some point and record, you know, once a week. I want to be doing more of the group shows with you guys. If anybody that is interested and want to talk Mavs, Tyler there in the chat, we'll start having draft shows and things of that nature. We're going to be picking up we're going to change our content structure. Obviously we have to, because the season's over for the Mavericks, but you know, if you want to support the show, the ways you can do so are by subscribing. We should have some fun. We have a lot of off-season content in mind that will lend itself to podcast stuff too. So you can tell your friends, that would be great. And if there are, if the spirit moves you, there's a couple of links in the show notes that gives to Josh and I directly. So we got, oh yeah, that reminds me. I got to pull up. I'll do that here after the break here. So we will be right back. Okay, thank you so much. Before we move on, I do want to send a quick shout out to one of our listeners named named Sanjay. He sent us a little bit of money. Thank you so much, Sanjay. But he also had a question, and he said, and before we move on with this, I want to address this question. He said, will you address why each one of us, why we think Cooper will win Rookie of the Year? I before we get back to sort of my bitching and moaning, I think this is a good little palate cleanser. Do you want to go first? Or you want me to?
You go first, because I'm trying to think of how I want to answer that.
Okay. It's a good question, by the way.
Yeah.
And we'll definitely circle back on that once he eventually wins in the offseason. There have been some like this argument is so much more fun than the MVP debate, because I think largely it sat dormant for such a long time. And then you look at it and there were a few loud, frankly annoying, even though I'm actually friends with a couple of them, voices in the media that loudly proclaimed Con Kinnable as Rookie of the Year because of an array of advanced stats that a normal person would never know about or think about. Con Kinnable will not win Rookie of the Year. Cooper Flagg will win Rookie of the Year because moments matter. And as much as the Charlotte Hornets are a very fun story and I would like to reward winning, the Rookie of the Year has never once been about winning. It has been about numbers and moments. And Cooper Flagg has been mentioned in rookie discussions with Michael Jordan, Wilt Chamberlain, Allen Iverson, and some of the other more eye-popping rookies of the last 50 years of basketball. Con Kinnipple has been mentioned for breaking Steph Curry's record and for leading the NBA in three-pointers made. Both of those things are quite cool. It's just one of these things is not like the other. What's your response?
I think that's fair. I think the reason, if you're saying why Cooper is going to win Rookie of the Year, I think it's context matters. I think Cooper, a lot of the advanced numbers that favor Con, some of that, a lot of that could be there because Con is playing his position on a team that is surrounding him with guys that accentuate what he does. And he's playing with a great point guard in LaMelo Ball. And LaMelo Ball has been healthy for most of the year and has had a great season. Cooper, meanwhile, is playing on a team that's obviously bad, but not just bad, but he's playing out of position and in ineffectual lineups deliberately designed to make him statistically output worse for the good of future development. You know, kid is on the record. He wants him to play point guard. He wants him to feel uncomfortable. He wants to develop his ball handling skills, his lead ball handling skills, even if that means you're going to have some rough nights and the team is going to look crappy because, again, they're not. Cooper's most played lineup this season is without a point guard, I think. So the fact that, like, when Cooper is playing his position, which is not point guard, you know, whether you want to call it two guard, the three, the four, you can look at all that and all those numbers and they get astronomically better. So to hold that against him feels a little rough when you consider that despite that, he's still having one of the most productive rookie seasons in the history of the NBA. And the efficiency thing is annoying. The only thing that's really, it's like Cooper's not shooting like 39% from the floor, like on, right. Like, you know, like he's not like, he's still shooting really well on twos. Like, yeah, he can't hit threes, you know, whatever. Not whatever. I mean, that's important. But, like, he's shooting. Let me look it up now. What is he shooting on twos? Oh, my gosh. I should have looked this up. I mean, he's shooting 51% on twos. And when you consider the majority of those are probably self-created looks because he's, again, he's playing point guard. That's pretty great for a rookie. 51% on twos for a rookie that's having to self-generate most of his offense playing out of position. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. The threes are bad, sure, but he's great at the free throw line, 82%. His turnovers, like he finishes the season averaging less than 2.5 turnovers per game when you consider what the role, like again, so all that to me, if he wins Rookie of the Year or not, like my thing has almost been, I don't care if he wins it or not. It's been more, can we just consider the context of the situations and not just be like, Con better, shoots better, numbers better. Like, there's a reason the numbers are better.
But it's not that many numbers. And it's not the kind of numbers that you use in a human being conversation with people that enjoy basketball for watching the basketball. Like, I am not an anti-analytics guy. But it's just, if you have to go, there's one douche over the weekend that was like, well, look at his rookie plus minus box. And I'm just like, shut the fuck up. Nobody looks at that stuff. Like, even Bill Simmons' argument was, I want to reward the winning. I respect that. That's much more fun to me than, oh, well, look at these impact numbers. And I'm like, sure, his impact numbers are tied to the fact that his team's better. Like, come on.
And he plays with a point guard. That's what I mean. Context matters. Like, yeah. you swap Con and Cooper. You put Cooper in Charlotte. You put Con here. I mean, it's a no contest. Like, just look what their numbers would have.
Killer Cam asks a good question. He says, what winning? Well, they did win 21 more games than last season. So
I know they're the ninth seed in the East, but that's, yeah.
The 21 game improvement, pretty good. You know, the Mavericks are going to be like, right now, if you were to ask me what I think the Mavericks finish next year, like, the Mavericks need to finish like 42 games, but even that's a 16 win improvement. Right? Like, it's hard. Like, winning in the NBA is harder than we give it. Then Dirk spoiled us in so many ways because we won 50 games for 12 years in a row. It's like, winning 40 games is hard. Mm-hmm. So anyway, okay. Back to your thought about, cause you were talking about before the break about sort of team culture and the like. I'm hopeful that's ultimately correct, and largely, you know, I hope somebody is throwing this podcast in my face when the Mavericks jump to 4 in the lottery or something like that. I don't know. There's a series of guys that I have grown, you know, it's like 1 through 10. I've talked all season. 1 through 10 is pretty good, but I don't want, like, Nate Amat. I don't want the point guard out of a University of Arkansas. I'm going to have fun arguing with people about that one. And let me just get this out of the way. He's 6 foot tall. And if you think height doesn't matter, go look at the top 8 teams from, like, the final 8 teams in the NBA playoffs for the last several years. And tell me how many starters are 6 foot tall or shorter, or like even 6'4" or shorter. Like, stuff matters. Height matters. So anyways, but there's gonna be a lot of fun conversations to be had. And I would just rather have that array of choices is where we go from here. The Mavericks have 3 picks in this next draft, 2 in the first round, which is great. They have a real chance to become better. I just am to the point to where the Mavericks have so many choices to make. It's just like, I don't really want Kidd to coach the team. I know he's going to coach the team, but I can't imagine why he would be the good, right coach for this team. Like, I feel there's just so much that goes around, and, like, maybe it's just me as I get older, you know, part of why, and you know this because you've had to deal with my, like, it's not conspiracy, but like my passionate frustration with how the PR shapes how this team is consumed. But it's like a lot of the Mavericks get put in these positions due to their own stupid choices. And then they throw their hands up and they're like, well, it was always going to be this way. It's like, no, it wasn't. It's just make better choices.
I could say that for a lot of things. I don't know. I haven't even thought about Jason Kidd. I haven't thought about Jason Kidd in a while.
He's not going to be the GM, Robbie. Don't worry. They think he's actually doing a good job coaching. I'm not kidding. Like, and you could make the argument that he has done a good job coaching in that the roster was better. They probably should have been like the 10th worst record, you know, but so he did a good job, like, making them lose right up until the games that he couldn't. And, like, I understand that. And I just, Kidd is not going to be the general manager. Like, he can't do both. Unless he slides out of one, then he wouldn't be coach. Like, the both is where I get, like, really, like, because it just, you can't do it. There's too much going on. So,
yeah. No, I'm with you. I mean, it's a pretty pivotal, this is a pivotal summer also. Like, this is a kind of shit or get off the pot summer to me. Like, are they really going to run this back with, like, Daniel Gafford and Clay and all these older vets with Cooper? Like, if this isn't, like, if you trade Anthony Davis and then you don't tear down even more, it's going to be really awkward to me. If they keep trying to convince themselves of, like, this two timelines approach, like, trading Anthony Davis is a good step towards maybe they're not going to do that, but they still have a lot of work to do with this roster to kind of shape it around Cooper and make it feel like it's going to be sustainable for the years going forward, which means they might have to be even worse next season. I know some fans are going to not want to hear that because Kyrie's coming back. And I mean, I've already seen the talk like Kyrie back, Lively back, and you bring everyone else back. And this is, you know, team's second year Cooper. And, you know, I could believe it. I could see it, but there's going to have to come a reckoning. Like, do they want to try to tear this down to the studs and rebuild around Cooper or not? And if they don't, then they better win. Like, if they don't, they need to be like a 48 win team next season. And if they're not, then we have other problems. But I don't know. That's just kind of the prevailing thought in my head as we end the season.
Well, and Tyler Edsel just kind of ruined, you know, took a dump and everybody's up. What did the upper decker give? He just pointed out that according to the Tankathon's draft odds, the Mavericks now have a better chance of drafting ninth or later than in the top four. I'm not going to check his math on that, but that's the kind of mood I'm in right now. So we'll see. I'm just so grumpy. I just can't believe this. The last game of the season. He pointed out that the Mavericks were the only one of the Tankathon teams that won on the final day of the year.
Yeah, and they played Klay Thompson hit four threes in 10 minutes. Chris Middleton started. Starting Chris Middleton and him playing the first 6 minutes of the game and him scoring 8 points in those 6 minutes was really funny.
And there's an element of this where Kidd is trying to thread the needle between it being fan appreciation night and him going, fuck, fuck, fuck. It's like they were up 30 points. And they were
33 to 17. Like the game was over. Like I've heard some people be like, they're playing their bench. What do you expect? Because in the second half, they placed little two way guys. Well, like all the main guys played in the first 10 minutes of the game. And the game was over in those 10 minutes. Like it was never, like it was over. Who cares? Like if you want to lose the game, maybe you start AJ Johnson and Tyler Smith and play them.
It's opening tip
instead of building a 33 to 17 lead. But again, yeah, like you said, I think the fan appreciation thing.
It's just so much more about the last 50 games than it is this game, and that it comes home to roost and you look at all of it at once and it's like, oh God. Because they're just like, if they fall in the lottery as they have fallen or stayed the same all but one time. Now, the one time they moved, they went to one. So we're pretty pleased with that one opportunity. But I just, you know, knowing how the statistics work out, it doesn't make you super comfortable about what's coming next.
I know.
Anyway. All right, let's get out of here. We'll be back at some point. I will I'll pick a night. My wife's out of town several days in a row here. I'll pick a night. Let's just say like it might be Tuesday, might be Wednesday at like 9 o'clock, and I'll do what do I call it? My group therapy. And if you guys be looking, like, here's how, if you guys want to be a part of these, like, go to the YouTube page, subscribe, and then you get notified when these things are up. Follow me on Twitter. I'll be posting about it in advance. I want to hear from you people and talk about all this stuff. I've not had the juice to do it lately. I'm just getting today. The last several days have been, I am too old to do this. But the reality is, it's just the Mavericks have been so boring that it's not been worth doing.
Yeah.
So,
there's nothing to talk about.
Yeah. All right. Everybody be good. Talk soon. Go Mavs.